Welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. This show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success, whether you're starting a small business or already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunholder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, drawing on our collective experience of having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal the dirty secrets of small business.
In today's show, we're going to be focusing on four segments. First one are common myths of small business ownership. We're going to talk about one and debunk it. Next one is Dirty Secret of the Week. Third one is how come with a question. How come? And as I ponder the world, I'm going to come up with a how come question. And we're going to talk about that for a few minutes. And then the fourth is a small business success story pulled from our extensive client base of success. Adam's going to chronicle and kind of tell the story of one of our success companies. You know, most small business owners are stuck in a state of how. How do I make a profit plan? How do I present my company? How do I create a marketing plan? How do I find good people and hold on to them? The list of how questions is endless. We're Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches. We help small business owners get unstuck from that state of how.
Give us a call at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670. That's how to reach us when we're not on the air here. Or better yet, you can visit us at MaximumVP.com. You can learn more about us, about our approach to what we do in helping small owners, and see quite a few of our client success stories here. So our first segment today is going to be going through and debunking a common myth of business. And this is one that comes up, and I got to believe if you own a company out there, even if you don't own a company, you work for a company, you've probably seen this before. And so we're here to debunk this. And that is that customers can be retrained. That is a myth. In fact, the truth is customers cannot be retrained.
They are what they are.
You know, many business owners we meet are, quote unquote, they're working with their customers to make the relationship better, when in reality, it's the business owner who's changing the way that they do things instead of these people. These people are going to do what they do. And so once people are used to doing things in a certain way, they are unlikely to change, even if they say they're willing. And certainly, maybe they'll change for a day or for a transaction, but eventually, pretty soon, they're going to go back to who they are and what they do, or they're going to change to somebody else and not do business with you anymore because they prefer to be treated the way that they were being treated before.
So who has to be retained or not retrained?
Retrained.
Let me try that again.
That's okay.
Retrained.
The owners themselves have to be retrained to understand that it's often better to lose these kind of customers. When you start to look at all the hoops that you and your team are going through to try to retrain this customer, or to, instead of trying to retrain, we're putting up with them, but they aren't a fit. And it's often what we refer to as kind of chasing revenue, you're chasing dollars here. If you were to look at the time, effort, and probably dollars you put into this thing, chances are this customer who's a pain in the butt for you probably is not profitable for you.
Well, you know, you probably should go through a little bit of analysis to determine what customers have to be retrained and then make that determination. And I couldn't agree more. They're going to do what they know how to do. And it's very, very difficult to have behavior changes take place. Yeah. You know, the best of intentions, really, people will fall back and do what they know how to do. But the first part of the analysis should be determine what a good customer looks like. Profile that customer.
Well, I think, too, I think we're telling here, Jack, is to define what a bad customer looks like.
Well, and here's what I was thinking here, yeah, as you brought up that, you know, the myth that we're debunking here. You know, are they profitable? Do they pay on time? Do they like you and you like them? Are they an advocate for you? If you get your team together, pull your team together and do a little whiteboarding here. Whiteboarding means put a big whiteboard up that you can mark all over the place in some conference room and spend a half a day kind of going through, if you have a lot of customers, which ones are good and bad. Well, how do you determine that? Well, you measure them against the criteria that you're setting up. And you do that, and from there, the bad scores are the ones that basically need retraining, and they should be the one suspect to, why in the heck do I even bother with these guys?
Well, let me suggest this. We have a book that both Jack and I and many of our clients, and I'm guessing many of you there in the audience have read, called Good to Great by an author named Jim Collins. And there's an analogy here I want to make. He talks about employees. And he has a very great great visual here in terms of whether you should keep an employee or not. I think it's very relevant here, Jack, to keeping a customer or not.
Yeah,
so
right.
what Collins talks about here in Good to Great is that if you know, pick an employee by name. So if that employee walks in and she gives you her 2-week notice, would you be A, very upset, distraught, you know, you're not sure what you're going to do without that person, or B, secretly relieved that the person's leaving?
Yeah, that's a good test. We've used it often and counsel our clients to make
I think that applies here when it comes to customers, Jack. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden those customers come in and say, hey, guess what? We found somebody else to provide what you're providing, or a version of what you're providing.
Are you relieved or not?
Yeah, would you be distraught and upset about it, or would you be secretly relieved? Because you know what? If you're secretly relieved, guess what? Those are the ones you got to start getting rid of pretty quickly. I'd start with those. I think that's a pretty fast, and be honest with yourself.
Well, that's the key, you know.
That's why, to Jack's point, I think bringing your team together is key, because you know, their team, if you have a good team, they're going to be honest with you and say, hey, boss.
What a pain, and everyone knows it, and so you as the boss make those tough decisions or start talking about them to the point where, look, you know, why do we want to put up this person? Very demanding, never wants to pay, doesn't pay on time, doesn't really do anything for us. We dread the phone calls we get from them. But geez, boss, he's paying us some pretty big bucks every year. Well, that's part of the planning. And you just don't do this hastily. You basically put a big target on him. Can we really retrain him? No. Let's price our way out of this guy so he leaves. Or let's, you know, phase him out over time. But we got to get going on it. And if he's that significant from a financial standpoint, on the health of our company, shame on us. That makes it even more imperative that we have to work on.
That makes it for a longer-term plan. We've had all kinds of cases like that. We've had one where, we may even share the story here a little bit before, where we had a client that had, one of their customers was, I think it was 88%, 87%. It was a big chunk, by all means, of their business. And they couldn't just get rid of them, because if they did, they'd be out of business. But that's more of an extreme case. We had another client that's an IT client. And doing pretty well, but they had this one customer that was, and I'll pick on lawyers here, it was a law firm was being a pain in the butt. Imagine that, right? A lawyer being a pain in the butt, right?
That's unimaginable, isn't it?
So, you know, this law firm wouldn't update things in terms of what they needed to do from a system standpoint. They kept making promises. Yeah, we'll do it, we'll do it, we'll do it. And year after year, it didn't happen. And almost to a person, every one of his team was complaining about this company, and how they all dreaded. In fact, one guy almost quit over it. He said, if I have to go to that place again, Jack, I'm done.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
so right. What kind of message are you sending to your team? Who's more important? Is your team more important, or is this
customer? The team, and you want to bring, especially in today's world, you want to have the team part of the decision making, part of the vetting. Let them talk about real experiences, and don't you cover it up as the leader here.
But I think that's an important question to ask. I think many owners, Jack, will lose sight of that. To your point, they're all of a sudden they're looking at the revenue and say, well, this is going to have an impact in terms of our sales. Oh yeah, but again, if take that question I asked before. What if your best employee, because of that pain in the butt customer, came in one day and said, "You know what, boss, I'm done. I can't take it anymore." It'd make your decision to fire that customer pretty easy, wouldn't it?
Sure would.
So let's not let it get to that point where it's going to be the case. You know?
Well, one of our past segments talking about the customer is always right. No, it's not the case at all. The customer has to fit your profile and talk about all the negatives that basically come with a company can be tracked back to. Either bad employees, which you have to get rid of, or bad customers that you have to get rid of. I mean, it's that simple, and there should be processes to do both in place.
No, we go through the same things ourselves, folks. Okay, we had a client last year that the relationship changed to the point where we had to get rid of him. Mm. And the way we did it was the way we often suggest with our clients is we use pricing to make it happen.
That's right. That's a very, very good way to do it. If you are going to have a pain in the butt here for a while, well, you can be at least paid to do it. But, you know, sooner or later, you're heading to a breakup. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, again, you got to look at this and be very, very certain that, you know, what this kind of customer looks like that you're looking for, or the ones that you don't know that you're looking for. To make sure you know what they look like so you can keep the good customers and, you know, pass away or pass on the other customers to somebody else. Because customers cannot be retrained. And look at your team and the message you're sending to your team if you say the customer is more important than them. So make sure you keep your team doing well and keep them at top of mind, not your customers who are a pain in the Budinsky. So
the Budinsky. That's right. That's great, Budinsky.
I know, it's one of your favorite words, Jack. All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to be delving into our dirty secret of the week. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back. The Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't you wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We've helped hundreds. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
We love helping owners of all sizes and shapes and colors. So not just the small ones, even if they're tall ones, but the ones that own
the small
businesses.
Though. Yeah, the small ones are the most fun.
Owners of small businesses. We always like to mess with that phrase because we want to make sure people are clear. We like companies with anywhere from 1 to 25 employees.
Not small business owners, owners of small businesses.
Correct.
But small business owners.
Some of them are small,
like.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all right. We're equal opportunity helpers from that standpoint.
Most
are coachable, right?
That's right.
All right. So as we get into this segment, we're going to be revealing and delving into our dirty secret of the week. And if you're a small business owner who's looking for some help, you can reach us here in the studio. But you can also call us offline as well. The way to get a hold of us that way is 877-849-0670. And you can also email us at radio@maximumvp.com or check us out online, maximumvp.com. So our dirty secret this week. Now, cover your belly buttons here, folks, because this might be a little tough to take, but not everybody is cut out to be a business owner.
No kidding. Is that right?
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Adam.
So, now, that's true for those of you who own companies. You might not be cut out for it. That's okay. But most of you are. But realize that most everybody else you talk to and deal with are not. So they just are not going to understand you.
Yeah, we like to break up the world into two places here, or two phases, two categories. That's the word I'm looking for. One, a person is either a job person, that's one, or they're an entrepreneur or a business owner. The two are not compatible. You are not both of those together. It's just impossible. And a job person is one who is primarily settled in with the benefits and the salaries and the day-to-day routine, which doesn't vary too much. And when they wander off the reservation and try to become an owner of a business, it can be very devastating for many of them. Versus the business owner, they basically have those instincts and they have the burning desire ultimately to become just that, a business owner.
Let me give you some examples of what that might look like. We've had a lot of experience with this in terms of helping. Because it's not, let's say, a black and white issue, as Jack's saying. You know, some people just don't know, and they have that germ or that seed of being a business owner, being an entrepreneur is in there. We just need to kind of feed it and flower it here a little bit to get them to get it to come forward, but help to take some of that wrong thinking out of the way. But sometimes it's just not there. There's really nothing to be able for us to fertilize and coax along here. But one of the things that people will often do, and this is a key that maybe a key sign for you if you're not cut out to be a business owner, is do you spend money as soon as it's there? You spend it as soon as it's there. We've had a number of cases where we've seen that, okay?
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, one happened to be a food establishment. And there's money coming in from unusual sources, but it came in, you know, with heartfelt, you know, desires, things that happened. All of a sudden, money came in, and, you know, this person hadn't had a lot of money to kind of spare. Once it was there, that money was gone faster than it was coming in, just about.
Right? I mean, no, not so just about. It was. Okay. It was gone quick.
So if that happens to you, or you see that, or if you're working for somebody who's that way, where, again, that money is spent almost as soon as it's there. Another thing to look for is folks who cannot hire and retain good people. And we had this where often people are thinking so small. And so we had a client for a little while, a very little while. We figured this out pretty quickly into our process. It wasn't quite a fit for us, that this person was more of a job person, where is running the company out of his basement. Spouse is very actively involved in the business, even though she wasn't. She was very actively involved and very influential. Spouse is often.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean she was, but she wasn't?
All right. So because they're married, by marriage, you're involved in the business. Because you sleep with the owner at night, you're involved in the business because that's part of your discussion. Yet she was not involved day to day because she wasn't part of the product or service. It wasn't doing anything with the business. But she had a lot of influence over the owner of the business.
A lot of throwing those firebombs from the back bench, right? Yeah.
And so, in a strange twist of fate, you know, we introduced, you know, after this person was, this company was a client for a couple months of ours. It didn't quite work out, so we kind of parted. And about a year later, we actually introduced this person to another client of ours, because we often look for helping our clients grow through acquisition. And it was obvious that this former client of ours didn't want to really kind of grow the business, but had some good skills, had some good customers. So we introduced them to kind of get a sense for each other. And what happened was, part of the discussion happened was that our former client had an employee that he couldn't keep busy. And our current client was looking for an employee just like this employee, right? So they talked about, well, maybe we can share the employee, share the resource. And again, our former client just wanted to get rid of the guy because it was a burden on him to have to kind of keep the guy busy, so to speak, instead of doing the work himself. So it wound up being very good for both of them, because our former client got rid of this person he didn't want. And our current client, who'd been looking for a guy like this for years,
had this guy, outcome. Right? Mm-hmm.
And it turns out a couple years later, not going directly, but through a search firm, another employee of this former client of ours applied for and got a job with this other current client of ours. And so it became a good recruiting ground for him, but he wasn't able to really be more of that business owner mentality. So you got to be careful with those things, right? So keep that in mind.
Well, what about some pros and cons about a good business owner or a job person? You know, a good business owner, somebody who's cut out to be a good business owner, has to be decisive. You know, you can't be wishy-washy and wobbling around. The opportunity or crisis at hand might come and go by the time you basically decide what it is you want to do here. So you got to be oriented towards that.
And usually when it comes to people, a couple of examples but I think it's probably thinking, Jack. It's when people, it becomes easier to be less decisive when it comes to people.
Very much so. It's very, because you got to face them down. You got to look them right in the eye and deliver bad news if that's what, and it seems like so often that's the case. You got to deliver bad news
so you
in
delay
various
on
forms.
It, right? Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. And you can't be a no excuses kind of, or an excuses kind of person. You got to be no excuses. Now, what does that mean? Well, you as a business owner, you got to own the problem. As they say, the buck stops with you. Well, you can't basically keep blaming your employees and talking about them in a negative way. We get that often, when somebody, the business owner, starts talking about an employee who isn't really performing or doesn't feel good about that employee. And every time we come together, there's 5 to 10 minutes about how that employee isn't basically satisfactory. Well, you got to take decisive action, and you can't make excuses for anything in that company, because you're the one who can change it, and you have that ability as the owner of the company. You can't be only motivated by money. You can't be moody. You know, you're going to have setbacks. And when those setbacks come, you can't come in dragging your knuckles on the ground. You basically have to own up and keep a bright, really reasonable, bright disposition to keep your troops motivated.
Well, that's one of the things we tell our clients. They can come to us and complain because nobody else is going to care. We care a little bit. We'll help them work through, but let them kind of air it and say, okay, let's move on. But don't complain to your team. Come complain to us a little bit. We'll help you work it through it.
That's right. You can't be disorganized, and you got to move ideas along. You should have advisors if you don't, and they can, again, shortcut so many issues that basically will come about in your business. And don't break promises. You know, that's key. And those kind of things have to be inherent in you. And if they are, chances are you could be a pretty good business owner.
Those are good advice, Jack. I like those. Those are some good keys to kind of keep out. And we have all kinds of stories that we could share with you today, but we're running short in time in this segment. So, but yeah, keep in mind, not everybody who owns a company should be owning a company. Not everybody's cut out to be a business owner. It doesn't mean you can't be, but you got to accept some of these things that we're talking about here today and make sure you look at the world the right way. You can't look at it like an employee looks at it. You got to look at it a little differently. So you can do it. If you need some help, give us a shout.
Right.
When we come back here, we're going to be having the how come part of our show here, where we kind of pick Jack's brain, what's kind of going through his mind. He'll start with a how come question. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
Yeah, a lot of those how questions, like things we were discussing here earlier today in terms of retraining your customers. How come I can't retrain my customer? Well, guess what? You can't retrain customers, so quit trying, and maybe you should give us a call. We can help you figure out how do I get rid of this customer.
Great suggestion.
And have my business still do pretty well. Or how do I know if I'm how do I know if I'm a business owner or not, or if I'm cut out to be a business owner? Or how do I get better at being a business owner? That's what we help people with. And so if you want to talk to us about it, you can talk to us here on the radio. You can talk to us offline as well. You can reach us at 877-849-0670. Check us out online at MaximumVP.com.
You know, if you're a small business owner defined as 1 to 25 employees, you don't have a problem that we can help or that we cannot give you perspective and probably solve for you.
That's right.
Give us a call, let us know.
All right. So not only do our clients and the other small business owners out there have a lot of how questions, we do too. We are small business owners. And this is the portion of our show where we have the how come with a question mark after. How come segment. So, Jack, what's on your mind today?
How come? As I was pondering this weekend, I was watching a couple of baseball games. And every time somebody hit a home run or if the home team won, they'd fire off fireworks. So it got me thinking about fireworks. And we live in Ohio here, and I got to believe many of the states around this country have similar laws. But how come you can legally buy fireworks in Ohio, but you can't shoot them off? Wait a minute. Now, who passed a law like that? We can buy them, but we can't shoot them off.
Not in that state.
In Ohio. Yeah, we got to go out of,
right.
they call it the liar's form when you're buying fireworks. And you have to state that even though you're buying these fireworks in Ohio, you're going to shoot them off like some other state, like the adjoining states, like Pennsylvania or Indiana or West Virginia or somewhere else. Who would establish that kind of law? I was reading, it just so happened, what got me thinking is that the legislature is going to pass something to allow you to shoot these things off.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Well, but this has been going on for decades,
That's what I was winking at.
Better late
kind of
than never.
Right? Well, I haven't done a map, but as you mentioned, I guess as I think about it, Jack, as you drive around the country, which many of you might be doing here this summer, you'll probably notice, I haven't done a map. I'm sure if you look at the map, I got to believe 9 out of 10 of these fireworks places are right about the border, right? It's within 5-10 miles of the border. So it's very easy. Oh, yeah, no problem. I'm from Indiana. I'm coming over to Ohio to buy these. I'm going to go shoot them back over to Indiana. I'm not going to shoot them here in Ohio, right? So it makes it easier to kind of say with a straight face that you aren't going to Because I have relatives that have purchased them down in like South Carolina, right? And they bring it back to Ohio to shoot them off.
So what does that say about small business? And it doesn't say much about small business directly, but indirectly. My question, the other how come question I have is, how come so many small business owners think business is complicated? Now, I can understand a lot of versions of that, one of which is the fireworks issue. But we get all these laws and regulations passed, and they aren't often thought out, even though it's pretend that, hey, these are going to be for the benefit of small business owners and our constituencies, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't seem to work out like that. There's lots of confusion.
Well, they aren't enforced either. They're just there on the books.
That's right. So
in case they want to come back at you, in case something does bad that happened, they can come back. I don't know. They come back to the place that sold it. Well, look, I have the form that Jack filled out. He said he wasn't going to light them off here. Well, so I'm protecting. I'm covering my butt.
That's what we get. We get a lot of that stuff. Not progressive. Hey, let's make your simple. Let's make your business simple. Let's create a plan, not an academic, exercise, but let's create a plan that incorporates. We have, as coaches, we have 7 keys to success, and we create plans, and we try to take the complexity out of business that so many small business owners feel that exists, and it does in their minds.
Right. Well, how come? How come they feel it's so complicated, Jack?
That's right. That's a great question, and the answer is that they don't have the knowledge of business to make it simple. They don't know how to put the weight on the right things. They don't know how to look at the business world in a way that gives them comfort and allows them to execute plans.
Maybe if I can make an analogy. If you're going to go have an apprenticeship somewhere, if you're going to be a plumber or electrician or something like that, they don't just throw you in front of a box and say, here, go start moving wires around, or throw you in front of a bunch of pipes and say, here, start moving these things around. And they give you some training on that, right? They aren't going to put you out in the field. But when it comes to owning a business,
hey, you're free to do it.
Hey, you go online, you can fill out a form, and you're set up, and with a couple hundred bucks, hey, here you go, Jack. You're officially licensed as a business owner.
That's right.
It. You don't need anything else, right? So your point, there's no test you have to pass or training to say, can you fill out a form? And even then, people just start doing stuff, right?
I think that's why so many small businesses fail. Don't they have statistics on that show, and the numbers are arguable, but, within 3 to 4 years, there's going to be 70% of companies that started no longer in business.
Yep.
Well, why is that? And then a journalist will come along and write about that and quote some guy about undercapitalized and all these kinds of crazy things that either side seems to know what they're talking about. No wonder it seems like it's so complicated. So we have some very simple visuals that allow the complexity to kind of drift away. One of them is what we call 3 circles. And if you go to our website, what's our website, Adam?
MaximumVP.com.
If you go to our website, you're going to see a 3-circle visual. And that 3-circle is going to be talking about the 3 components of a business. And it's very useful to condense all the complexities of business. It doesn't make any difference what business you're in. You have a product or a service. As simple as that sounds, listing it and describing it so that people can understand it can be a daunting task for some small businesses.
That's right. I'm looking at it right now, Jack. If you go to our website, MaximumVP.com, and on the menu, there's something called the MVP Playbook.
Excellent.
All right?
Right.
Underneath there, you've got the 3 circles, also our 7 keys to success. So if you click on that 3 circles, it'll take you to that page Jack's talking about to give you that nice, simple visual.
Perfect. So we can have all kinds of product ideas, and we do. We're out to dinner with people, and, hey, somebody's going to make a better salt shaker. Somebody's going to do whatever. The ideas flow through your mind. But if you don't, A, understand those and articulate them in terms of the next circle, which is the market, people have to need or buy your product. So you're looking at your product. You're looking at the need or buy question, because that's going to determine how many sales you get, or even if you get any sales. So those 2 are extremely important. And the 3rd one is administering the business. How does that mean? Doing the accounting, the books, hiring people, keeping good people, pricing your products, doing all those things, developing the plans, developing all those things that basically go into running a small business that's successful. And that's what we teach. And the complexity of business doesn't have to be complex.
No.
But it is, because those three things aren't coordinated with most people in their minds.
Yeah, they are presented that way, as we've talked about, you know, in prior shows too, about the idea of simple versus easy. It's not easy, but you can keep it simple. If you keep things simple, you feel very empowered. At least I know what to do or where the issue is or where I got to focus my attention. So keeping things simple keeps things relatively calm too. That's important as a leader, as you were talking about earlier. You gotta have a certain air about yourself. You can't be complaining about stuff or worried about stuff. You gotta, because you have all the answers anyway as the owner, as you know. People often ask you for the answers. If you have a simple framework in mind of knowing where things fit, even if you aren't sure what to do, you at least kind of know where, you know, that you're playing in the right sandbox, so to speak, or where you might need some help if you go outside for some guidance, that you can know, you know where to go ask for some help.
That's right. You know, it along with the seven keys, you know, the three circles allow you to make a simple analysis of your business. Any kind of problem that comes your way, you can put somewhere in some very user-friendly visuals. Why wouldn't you want to do that? You would want to do that. Everyone would want to do that. And if you do that, the complexity, how come so many small business owners think business is complicated? That would go away. And many times they don't even know it's complicated because they're so confused. That's why so many businesses do go out of business. The lights go out with them.
Yeah, they can never know everything. And you learn certain things by experience. I think many of us learn our best lessons, if you look back on your life, through experience. And you'd like to learn as much as you'd like to learn through somebody else's experience. And as you get older and wiser, you start to learn through that too. But the ones that really get ingrained in you are the ones that you've learned by doing yourself. And so there are certain mistakes or experiences you can learn from as an owner that are expensive but not going to put you out of business. But there are a few that, hey, if you don't watch it, they can put you out of business pretty quickly.
You know, when we first started this coaching, and we've been together for about 15 years, we used to not use the word planning. Because planning had such, and this is in our early years when we were just learning about the small business mindset. And, you know, the planning that most people are exposed to are academia plans, which use complexities and use words that basically have no bearing on what your business is. So the word planning gets still continues today, a bad rap. But we have found that to do planning in a simplistic way, and that's what we teach, basically takes the complexity out of a business. It just, you can't really exist well without a plan, but the plan you put together should be something that comes from your heart, uses your own language, uses your own stuff. It's simple. It makes sense to you. That's the key. That's what we're striving for here.
And whether you knew it or not, when you sign up to be that business owner, that's one of the things that comes with the job description, is keep things simple. And let me end with this. When we talk about what your job is as the owner of the company, it's three simple words.
Right.
Plan, direct, and control. Keep those three words in mind. Plan, direct, and control. If you don't have a plan in place, start there. If you have a plan, start to direct the activities of your team and all the folks that are there, and then you can control it through different meetings and different reporting. So keep it that simple, folks. So good question as always, Jack. Help folks will stick around for the last segment coming up here, which is our small business success story. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't you wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
And if you're stuck, You're not alone. Many people are stuck and have those how questions, and please feel free to reach out to us. You can reach us at 877-849-0670. You can check us out online at MaximumVP.com.
You know, it sounds corny, but we absolutely love our clients. You know, we don't take them on unless there's compatibility right from the get-go. We have a what we call a 14-point criteria that we literally grade each prospect to see if we're, you know, if they're coachable by our terms. Because if they're coachable, we're going to get them where they want to be. And if they aren't, our experience tells us don't even start.
That's right.
So,
all right. So I want to share a story here in our last segment here. It relates to one of our small business clients. And when we talk about small business, what we're talking about again is companies with anywhere from 1 to 25 employees. And I'll try to highlight which of our seven keys to success are most prevalent here. In this case, leadership, organization, and cash flow. Those three were pretty important when it comes to this story. And so, and this also ties back into something we were discussing earlier today, Jack, in terms of not everybody's cut out to be a business owner. And so,
right.
The situation we had here was we had a client that was a client for a couple years for us, and they'd been in business together for maybe 8 years at this point. And the company was hitting a bit of a tough stretch. And it became apparent that one owner really wanted to get out to get a job. And so what do you do in that case? You have two equal owners, and also one wants to kind of get a job. Now, they both kind of explored that. You know, as they're going through and the evolution of their business, they kind of divided and conquered. You know, when you were mentioning earlier about the three circles, how we look at the world of business, they kind of divide their duties out. They're both pretty good at the product or service. One took on more of the lead in terms of marketing and sales, and the other partner took on more of the lead in terms of administrative, in terms of doing
numbers.
Yeah,
good balance.
And people stuff, yeah.
Right.
So they kind of divide and conquer, which is pretty typical. When you look at owners, we got multiple owners of a company. Typically what happens is they tend to complement each other pretty well when it comes to the business side of stuff. Yeah, usually they're both pretty good at the product side. It's usually the other stuff that they kind of will divide and conquer on. Very, very common. They don't explain it that way, but if you keep it simple, you start to see it through that lens. You can see where they are all, where they have their strengths at. So these two had been doing that for a while. But as we kind of got through, the one really didn't have the stomach for what's often sometimes very, unstableness of owning a company where you don't have a steady paycheck every week or every couple weeks or every month where it can fluctuate up and down. There's that phrase out there often you'll hear that's quite true, which is you're often last to get paid.
That's right.
That's how it works.
That's exactly how it works, Adam. People who build in a salary to the owner, especially at a startup, especially with small companies that we deal with, it's going to doom them. It's very unrealistic.
Right.
So
this client had been going along, like I said, for about 7 or 8 years. It had grown slowly, had tried some things over the years. And what happened was, this is what happens too, is life started to happen, okay? Where one of the partners was having a, he had a wedding coming up. He was getting remarried. And so life was changing. So his needs and desires had changed since day one when they both left the big corporate America to start this thing. They were different. Whereas our other client had been more steady, was still married to the same person he was married to when they started, had kids, were kind of grown, but they were different stages of their life from that standpoint. That often is what triggers some of these things. But at the core of it, this one partner was really more comfortable with that steady paycheck, and so they both considered every option. Hey, should we just shut things down? Should we both go get jobs and look at that? Should we, have one of us buy the other one out? They looked at every option that was out there in terms of, here's the possibilities. And while the one, it became very helpful and he really wanted to go get a job and he really was taking to that, the other one was like, I've kind of looked at some of these applications for jobs and I've talked to a few people, but man, I can't get excited about it. I really like to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, he is that classic, in our language anyway, the job person or the business owner.
Right.
And he definitely was a business owner or is a business owner.
And so, these things will come to light often, like I said, when life changes or life circumstances might change, it will come to light, but also when you have some tougher times. I think it was it Rahm Emanuel talked about not wasting a crisis, right? Same thing can happen
in
business.
That's right.
You get a good, true sense. When things are going along well, everything's okay. You don't get a true sense of it, especially if you have a partner. You don't get a true sense of it until things aren't going so well. Then what happens? How do you deal with that? Do you all of a sudden, hey, well, I'm ready to get out and hit the eject button, fold up the tent, or am I doubling down and really hunkering down to kind of grind through this thing? Let's figure this thing out together. And so, you know, it became apparent to us, you know, through our time with them that it was really that black and white. So we worked out a deal where the one partner bought out the other partner. And it worked out
very favorable.
It was a fair price. I'd use that term. It's one of your favorite words, Jack. But it worked out. It was good for everybody involved. And it's kind of unique from the standpoint in terms of they're able to consolidate a lot of the debt that they'd had underneath the one of the partners' family, who was able to take it on and offer better terms than the bank was willing to be able to do.
Right.
And so this all occurred probably, was it 3 years ago now? Maybe it's 4 years ago now. It's been quite a few years.
I'll say four. Okay. I'm getting gun shy with that.
And so he's more than halfway through the buyout. The buyout was structured to be an 8-year deal, and a little bit more than halfway through, and things have gone very well. The prior partner got a job with a Fortune 500 company, doing very well there. And the small world things, he's actually using his prior company as a contractor to be able to do some work, because they have some work that they needed outsourced. So again, things parted.
They left on good terms. You know, there was no ugly divorce here. It was very mutual, both pursuing. You know, we talked about this for a while with them. But it the separation couldn't be any better orchestrated than it was.
And as often the case, when Jack and I have client situations, we'll often be very analytical and look back on things. And the tip off for us, we should have maybe put more weight on, was when the two of these guys, they were going up to a client to pick something up, and it was about a 12-hour drive each way, right? And they had a lot of things that they needed to talk about in those 12 hours back and forth. So that's 24 hours round trip. And wouldn't you know it, when they came back, Jack and I, we couldn't wait for the next meeting. We figured, okay, they have all the things figured out. They will talk through things. They're going to be in a much better place when they get back, right? Well, they get back, and they didn't say two words to each other about that. And we said, wait a minute. I said, we stuck Jack and I in a car for 24 hours round trip.
The whole world's going to be solved here, all the problems. Yeah.
All kinds of ideas going back and forth and talking through stuff. And they have difficult conversations to have those things kind of worked out, talked through.
I can still remember the quizzical looks, like, right. It didn't even dawn on them. That's just not how they were made up at all.
So again, they were partners, but they just weren't quite met, and they were on different wavelengths from that standpoint.
Yeah.
So our client has continued to be a client through all this, and actually, in addition to buying out his partner, he just closed on a purchase of another transaction as well, which is part of what he's always wanted to do. When he's thinking about being an entrepreneur, he wanted to have a number of companies that he was in charge of, and so he's now on his way. And again, they're both kind of moving in the direction. So it's okay. So if you're having that issue, where it's becoming apparent that one of you really doesn't belong, it's okay. You aren't the first ones to go through it. So make sure you have those difficult conversations, and you need to be completely open and honest with your partner about it. Don't kind of beat on the bush.
We facilitate those. Most of our clients have been with us for years, literally, because things take time to evolve, and we continually show value. That's why these relationships are so good. And in his case, now he's going to build an empire.
At least
that's what we think with small companies bought right.
Well, as always, we want to thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We invite you to tune in every Monday at noon. If you have questions before our next show, you can email them to radio@MaximumVP.com, post at facebook.com/MaximumVP, or call us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but also your trusted friends. Those two phrases are often misused, but it's true with us. We take time in hiring our clients. If they're coachable, we're going to get them where they want to go. So if you're looking to be successful, knowledgeable as a business owner, and take your company anywhere you want to go, we can help.
In case you missed a part of this show or any previous shows, you can listen to them at your leisure. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and be sure to leave a review when you're there. You can also go to wintradio.com, click on Archive Programs, select the show name, and simply download it to your computer. You can also listen on your mobile device at tunein.com.